I have enough experience in life to know that there are some things you do that stick with you. They're kind of like embedded like a photograph. And other things, experiences, praise God, they dissipate over time. You don't remember the pain or the disappointment or just the innocuous moments you've had to live out in life. But there are some memories that stay with you for a long, long time. And one of those memories for me was when I was a naval flight officer working in Indonesia. This particular flight assignment had us going straight and level at 500 feet during a mapping exercise. And I was the off-duty nav at the time, so I happened to be in the pulpit shooting the breeze with the pilot and co-pilot. And I discovered something that day that I suppose I should have been able to think through, but it never occurred to me to put a multi-engine prop and water buffalo in the same scenario. But you can stampede water buffalo with a multi-prop aircraft at 500 feet. I've been retired a long time, I can say it now. It was really one of those National Geographic moments that you don't dare film. But life is sometimes like that for us. The more age and experience you get, the more you're able to do flyovers of your memories. You know, when you're a child, time just drags. I can recall sitting on the front steps with my other five at the time siblings, one more after I left. We're all sitting there on the step outside. It was a Sunday, I know, because Mom and Dad had locked us outside, as they did every Sunday, to read the paper, the comics, under the fan, while y'all go outside to play. And we sat there on the steps, lots of yard, lots of toys scattered everywhere, thinking, there's nothing to do. And then you get older and you wonder, where did the life go? It's just like that. But you can look back and click, 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 clip through all those high points, the prom and being rejected from the military, or being worse, accepted by the military. And you can get an overview of things. Well, I want to do an overview today of leadership challenges that faced the person Moses. And there are two things in particular I want to call to our cognition. One is the difference between appointed leadership, and the other is anointed leadership. Because if you have got any church experience, organizational experience at all, you know it's possible to have leaders who are not. Anybody ever worked for anyone promoted one level above their competency? I have. I've worked for some excellent men and women, and I've worked for some that you were just glad that in two more years they were going to transfer. But in the issue of leading people, it's challenging. That's why so much literature and training is devoted to leadership principles. But I don't know that there's any really good material on leading God's people, because they are a particularly challenging group of folks. Not you in particular, just them in general. Because just like the people that Moses was required to leave, they had a bad case of dawanas. And I know most Christians have a lot of dawanas. I don't want to stay here. I don't want to go there. I don't want to listen. I don't want to follow. I don't want to. Now, you probably don't deal with Christians who are like that. I, however, do. But I wanted to do a flyover of the life of Moses, just in case some of you here are not acquainted with that distinguished person from the Bible who apparently wrote the first five books. Moses was born in a time when all male children were condemned to die, but his mother refused to do that. She hid him for 3 months and then stuck him in a basket and put him out on the River Nile. And he was discovered by Pharaoh's daughter, and she took compassion upon him and named him Moses, which, by the way, means drawn out. So she drew him out of the water. And he was raised and educated in the courts of Egypt. Later, as he began to identify with his own Hebrew people, he saw one of the Hebrew slaves being beaten, and he killed the beater. And when that was exposed, he fled for his life out into the wilderness, where he married a Cushite woman who was a daughter of a clergy out there someplace. Now, back in that time, most religions felt like their gods were geographic gods. So the priest of Midian worshiped the god over that area. And Moses became his son-in-law. Now, in the course of God doing business with Moses, some of you have heard of the burning bush incident where Moses gets sent back to the people that he had fled from, and he leads the people of God out of Egypt through the Red Sea to the other side en route to Canaan, the promised land, the land that God promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now he's going to cash in on the promise. Now Moses is out there with at least, according to Numbers chapter 11, 600,000 men on foot. And he's leading this bunch. And, you know, sometimes people get into conflicts with one another. Have you ever noticed that? They do. And when there's 600,000 of them out in the wilderness whining, the conflicts become frequent. And so Moses would sit in judgment over the conflicts. He'd sit there and the people would just line up as far as you could see. And he would instruct them one by one on the principles, statutes, and commands of God to resolve their issue. Well, one day his father-in-law, Jethro Gibbs, comes visiting from... No, I'm sorry, it was just Jethro. But you are listening. That's good. The priest of Midian came with his Moses' wife and two sons and brought them to the camp. And Moses spent some time telling him all that God had done. And Jethro acknowledged that your God is the God above all gods, made evening sacrifice to him. And the next day, Moses is sitting there with his long line. And Jethro comes out and says, excuse me, young man, what in the world are you doing? He said, well, you know, the people have problems. They bring their problems to me, and I sit here in judgment on that, and then I tell them what to do. And he said, seriously? You do this every day? What, do you have a death wish? You're going to wear yourself out and the people. Now, let the older, more experienced clergyman give you some counsel. And he threw this phrase in. I will give you counsel, and God be with you if you listen to my counsel. He said, what you need to do, and in fact, I want to make sure I get the job description detailed because I think it's important that you see what the counsel was. He says, you take the big issues to God on behalf of the people and let the other issues be settled by others, okay? So, select out of all the people able men who fear God, men of truth, and those who hate dishonest gain. Able, fear God, men of truth, they hate dishonest gain. Did you get it? Able, men who fear God, men who love the truth, men who hate dishonest gain. What was the first one? Able. All right, hang on to that thought. And you should place over them leaders of thousands and hundreds and fifties and tens. And so Moses listened to the elder clergyman and did something almost correct. He listened to his father-in-law and did all that he said. He chose able men. What happened to the rest of the job description? You know, men who fear God, honest, and hate dishonest gain. They love the truth and hate dishonest gain. Now, if you've read this story at all, you know he has trouble with these guys, remember? Now, if you do the math, you're looking at some 76,700 and change leaders. Can you imagine trying to put all those personalities on the same page? It's enough to make you say, "Here am I, Lord, send Aaron." So Moses bids his father-in-law goodbye, and Moses is left with 76,700 and change leaders that he is to personally instruct so that they can instruct the people. And the stuff that nobody knows how to deal with, they bring to him. Now, Moses now has a leadership structure in place for 600,000 plus people, and they continue on their merry way to the land of promise, with the exception of the fact that there is among them those identified as the rabble. Numbers chapter 11, the rabble who were among them had greedy desires, and also the sons of Israel wept. Who will give us meat to eat? Oh, it is this stinking cotton-picking manna that God supplies supernaturally every day for us. And on the sixth day, he doubles the portion so we don't have to do anything the next day. And now we're just sick of this. Oh, I remember the meat and the fish we used to eat in Egypt for free. Isn't it interesting how common healing of memories becomes when you get into another difficult situation? Oh, it was much better when we had no straw to make bricks, were malnourished and beaten regularly because we ate for free. There must have been something in their diet that gave them dementia, or something that they weren't taking, because they remembered the melons and the leeks and the onion and the garlic, and now all we have is this lousy mess that God supplies supernaturally every day that keeps us in good health but doesn't taste like quail. One of the things I find very, very interesting about this whole process we're going through is that these are people who were watching the supernatural activity of God on a daily basis. The cloud by day, the fire by night, and all kinds of other manifestations of his power. And it didn't keep them from complaining again and again and again. There's a lesson for us there that I'll pick up on some other time. So, one of the things I try to remind you guys of regularly is don't lose sight of the humanity of the Scriptures. These people are just like you. And I really love this revelation of the humanity of Moses in addressing God about the description, job description he's given to him. Listen to this. They're whining. Moses is unhappy. He goes to God and he says, "Why have you been so hard on your servant? Why have I not found any favor in your sight that you've laid the burden of all this people on me? Was it I who conceived all these people? Was it I who brought them forth that you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing child to the land which you swore to give to their fathers?' Where am I to get meat to eat all for all these people? For they weep before me saying, 'Give me meat, give me meat, give me meat.' I'm not able to carry all this people because it's too burdensome for me. So if you're going to deal with this, if you're going to force this on me, then do me a favor. Just kill me now." If I was preaching to pastors, I'd ask, anybody identify with this? So if you're going to deal thus with me, please just kill me at once if I found favor in your sight. And do not let me go through any more of this wretchedness. It's reminiscent of Elijah having a great day when the power of God shows up and he kills 450 prophets of Baal, and the people fall down and the fire comes down and consumes the water and the offering and the stones and the dirt. And then a woman says, "I'm going to kill you," and he runs away and hides in a cave. There are emotional highs and lows in leadership. Yeah. So, here he is with these 70-something thousand leaders that his rational, more experienced clergy guide gave him, and he still feels alone in the ministry. God has compassion on Moses, and he says, look, stop it. Here's what I want you to do. Go find 70 elders from among the 700,000, 600,000 that you know to be elders. Bring them to the tent of meeting, and I will meet with you there. And I'll give you people of the same spirit. I will take of the spirit that's upon you, and I will place it upon them, and they shall carry the burden with you. Have you ever been in a dynamic where you're perfectly at ease with the people you're sharing that dynamic with? Because it's like you have known one another forever. There's no effort to it. Now, there may be challenges. Issues will arise and you'll contend. But there won't be a break in the relationship. Because you've been joined spirit to spirit. Now, in the early days of ministry, church planters in particular will tell you that they will take any able-bodied person. Because there's so much to do. They'll let anybody who can do anything become something. I sat with a church planner not long ago, no one you know, and they've been at it for 3 years, and they were talking to me about their board of elders. And I said, you're barely constituted, and you have a board of elders? You know how common that mistake is? And then as we talked, he began to describe to me the difficulty he's having with them. Because they each have their own agenda. Does anybody here understand what I'm talking about? Okay. And it's a common mistake because we want to look like
the other churches.
And so we grab able-bodied people who may not love the truth, who may not fear God, and who may not be free of dishonest gain, but they're able-bodied. We lay hands on them too quickly. We put them in a position of responsibility and authority, and we can't get them out of it. Because now they have a foothold and a place where they can secure their orphan spirit. And so we create church documents to make sure I can have mine and you can have yours, but you can't have mine and I can't have yours. I wasn't expecting a lot of amens. But listen, I will take the spirit that's upon you and will place it upon them, and they shall bear the burden with you, so you will not bear it alone. There is no more lonesome place than being in a position of responsibility without allies. I'm telling you. And even when you have allies, somebody has to make the hard decisions, and you're the one that has to take the heat for it. But they have to be done. You don't rule by unanimity. You try to lead by consensus. But when it comes time to make a decision, somebody has to make the decision. And if you have allies who are of the same spirit, they'll walk with you because they will trust the outcome to the hand of the Lord if they have any security in you and in themselves. And so this happens. Y'all should know the story. He took the spirit upon them and he placed it upon the 70. Now, two of them stayed in the camp and didn't come up. But they all prophesied when that spirit came upon them, although they did it no more. Now, what do you think the significance of them prophesying might mean? I have reached this conclusion. It's important that you know you're anointed for the position God has placed you in. And it's important for other people to be able to identify your anointing. These 70 were distinguished among the 600,000. And later you'll read 603 because apparently they keep having babies. The Lord will confirm His appointment upon you with His anointing. People will give you an appointment whether you have an anointing or not.
All in favor? Yeah, he looks good. Let's elect that one. You know, like Saul. He's big and tall. He'll probably be a good leader. I vote for him.
Came to the place where even the Lord repented of that decision. Now, the journey did not get any easier. But the load was a bit lighter because there were people sharing it who had the same experience. For instance, right after this situation, we have the plague of the quail. Whine, 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 whine. Well, in the whining, God said, look, I'm going to bring them meat. And Moses said, what are we going to do? Kill all the cattle? Kill all the sheep? Where are you going to get meat? He said, don't forget who I am. I'm the God who can do anything. You just watch what I do. And so he caused a wind to blow, and I suppose the sky was just black with quail. And the greedy ones began to consume them immediately and heap them to themselves, and God sent judgment on them. There were a series of judgments that came. One of the next things that happened is the murmuring of Miriam and Aaron, brother and sister of Moses. Now, pay attention to what's happened. God sent his spirit upon somebody other than them. And they were the two standing next to the big guy. And they begin to say, now, wait a minute. Has God only spoken to Moses? Huh? And so God heard their whining and complaining. He says, you three, come to the tent of meeting. We need to have a chat. When God invites you for a chat, that's not good. He said, when I want to speak to a prophet, I'll come to him. And I'll speak to him in a vision or a dream. But when I speak to Moses, I talk straight to him. There's nothing dark or murky about it. Who do you think you are in the position you're in that you're going to rise up against the one I speak to? The cloud departed, and when they turned, Miriam was struck with leprosy. Aaron, her sister, appealed to his brother by calling him, Lord, please intervene. Don't leave her like this. So Moses turns right away and says, God, please. And God says, wait a minute. Now, if her dad spit on her, wouldn't she be unclean for 7 days? Put her outside the camp for 7 days. 7 days later, she was healed, and they move on. You would think they would learn. Then you have the negative report of the spies. And then the people who are irritated they can't go into the promised land, they do something stupid. They decide to go battle anyway. And Moses said, are you out of your mind? God's not going with you. Look, we can do this. They went up there and they got trounced. They come back and they have to head back the other way. So the people begin to rebel. And not only that, because Caleb and Joshua gave a good report, they picked up stones to stone them. And then God showed up. And they were struck again. Then, God is ticked. He says to Moses, look, I'm going to kill them all and start over with you. Now, don't you think Moses has had a few days where he'd be willing to let God do that? Okay? If you're not going to kill me, then kill them. Shoot up in here, give one of us some relief. But instead, he begins to intercede. And here's the thing I like about the intercession of Moses. Moses calls God to account for who God is. Because the Lord had just revealed to him, I'm the God who forgives iniquity, transgression, and sin. And so Moses falls on his face and begins to say, look, what do you think is going to be the outcome if you've drug us all out here and then you kill all of them? Everybody's going to say, you brought them out, but you weren't able to bring them in. Now, I appeal to you on the basis of who you've revealed yourself to be. Forgive our iniquity, transgression, and sin. And God goes, well, you got me there. And so he forgives them. But he says this, they're not coming in. I'll let them live. They were afraid that their children are going to die in the wilderness. They'll die in the wilderness and I'll bring their children in. And much, much later, generations later, they do cross and they have to be circumcised again. Because it's a whole new beginning. We're not going that far. at one point, those who were part... Remember now, Moses is of the tribe of Levi. Aaron is of the tribe of Levi. So is Miriam. A Levite married a Levite and had these three children. The Levites have been given the care of the temple. God has set them apart. They're not going to have an inheritance in the land. God has basically said, I am your inheritance. So at a certain point, Moses and Aaron come down, and there's a rebellion going on, led by this guy named Korah with a couple of other sidekicks and 250 other guys. And they said, are not all of God's people holy? Is God not in the midst of us? Who are you to exalt yourself over us? Who do you think you are? We hired you. We can fire you. Just because you're the pastor don't mean you're any different from the rest of us. You put your pants on just like I do. Y'all ever heard that kind of talk? At that point, children, drop the chocolate. Back away slowly. Nobody gets hurt. Because something's about to happen. See, I need to confess this to you. I made my life miserable for a long, long time. Because in the early days when the Lord separated me among the men I was walking with in the beginnings of this church, I was too insecure to accept the distinction and continued to act as if we were equals. And it cost me for years. When the Lord puts His finger on you, stop trying to get out from underneath His finger. Own up to what He's called you to be and walk in it. If you expect to see the increase in grace. Does that make any sense to you? Okay. So Korah leads this rebellion. And Moses said, you mean to tell me you're not satisfied that God Himself has made him your inheritance and that He has given you the honor of attending to the circumstances of worship for the entire nation? What do you want? The priesthood too? The priesthood which He gave to Aaron, you're just going to come and take it? I tell you what we're going to do. Tomorrow morning, we're going to find out who's God's with and who God's not. So here's the deal. You and your allies, you bring your censers and you begin to burn incense on it. And we'll do the same. Aaron will do the same. And the one that God answers, we will know who God has appointed. So they come out the next morning full of themselves. They've all got their incense burning. The Lord shows up, and it's not pretty. A couple of them wouldn't come, but God said to Moses, tell the people to get away from their tents. Stand back far away. Moses comes out and says, listen, if these men die the death of all men, then God has not sent us. But if something unusual happens, let's say the earth opens up and swallows them and their wives and their children and their possessions and their relatives, then you'll know God has sent us. And the ground went, whoop, and they were gone. Fire came and consumed the other 250 self-important persons. And then God said something very interesting. He said, collect their censer holders because those are holy because they were presented to the Lord. Now, have the priest beat them and cover the ark with them as a reminder to the people of God. I rule as I rule, not as you wish me to rule. Troubles don't go away, but I'm telling you, it's comforting to have people of the same spirit with you. It is my personal testimony that there needs to be a confidence in the Lord residing in each of us about that particular thing to which we have been appointed. And here's the principle of stewardship about the appointment of the Lord. If you will be faithful in it, God will increase the grace and measure of your sphere. But to do that, you have to be willing to acknowledge your calling and stand up in it, regardless of what others have to say about it. There is no imagination that I can conceive of that would explain the life that I live in giving my yes to the Lord over and over and over. There is no natural means for me to stand in the places of influence in which I stand were it not for God increasing the measure of His grace and the sphere of my responsibility. I didn't see most of this coming. I'm doing things in the earth today I did not imagine I would be involved in. And the only thing I can ascribe it to is saying yes to Jesus over and over and over. Now, has it cost me? Absolutely it has cost me. It's cost me my own will, cost me my own sense of direction, cost me my own desires, cost me the geography that I would choose to live in. It is going to cost you something, but I'm telling you, there's a reward mechanism in Christ that defies gold and silver. I'm not opposed to gold and silver. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not preaching against that stuff. I'm simply saying that service to the Lord in the place you have been called and appointed carries with it intangibles that refresh you in a way that nothing else on this planet can do. When I see the results of Healing Hearts ministry in the lives of people I care for, it's one of the things that makes me weep before the Lord in joy, because I watch broken human beings come into a very different place inside their own skin. You cannot buy that with gold. It is the work of the Lord. And I get to have a part in that because I put my hand over them and said, y'all do it, because there's no mess you can make the Holy Spirit and I can't clean up. Go for it. Let's find out what God's grace looks like through the healed you, through the servant leaders of the same spirit. But in any kind of transition, you're going to stand in two places simultaneously. There is the former way of doing things and the way that is unfolding to do things. Someone was chatting with me recently about our Father's house. And they made this comment. I'm usually in this kind of mindset. I just love what the Lord does here. And in the absence of any deep theological construct or word picture, I just call it, it's the magic that Jesus does. In the, not sleight of hand, but the genuine disappearance of old things and the genuine appearance of new things in the lives of the same people. They said to me, well, you know, one of the things that governs that is the fact that you have people of the same spirit working with you. And as I began to reflect on that, it kind of helped provoke some of what I'm sharing this morning. See, that I have lots and lots of pastor friends who live in various degrees of misery with people who have been elected to torment them. Some of them just make that the matter of their life. You know, Sunday afternoon is always roast pastor. There are others who are spiritual orphans who have been elected by a process like Korah, a man of renown among the people. And they take the favor of the people and mistake it for the favor of God and allow that collective support to ramrod things through. As God is my witness, I'm not a part of that, and I'm never going to be a part of it. Nor am I going to allow it in any sphere of responsibility over which I have oversight. Because I know this, if you want the Holy Spirit's presence, you had better handle one another gently. Because when that chaos and other nonsense that many of you have experienced comes along, he takes flight like the startled dove. You know, I have doves around my house. And I have put this to the test. If I move slowly, carefully, and quietly, they'll continue to feed even if they look at me. But if I slam the door and come out, they're gone. The presence of the Lord requires an alignment with His Spirit. And I'm happy to report to you today that there are those in this house who have demonstrated they have the same spirit toward God. They fear the Lord. They are not after dishonest gain. And they are people of the truth. And they serve us here. And I want to introduce some of them to you. Their faces are familiar. The scope of their task may be unfamiliar. And that's partly my fault. One of the reasons I'm not a big fan of organizational charts is it tends to project a pecking order for the people. And those who have the orphan spirit and want a position start figuring out, how can I get up there? So my counsel to our facilitators is, if we ever make an organizational chart, it's not going to look like this, where all resources flow to the top dog. It's going to look like this, where the resources flow to the people of God who are representing the Lord throughout our community. So there should be a ministry chart coming up here. It's not necessarily an organizational chart per se, but I want you to see and grasp the extent of what we attempt to put in place here. Now, Pete Romano is not with us this morning because his daughter's getting married Monday, so he's busy doing that stuff, but in exchange for his absence, he's going to have the pulpit the last Sunday in September. That ought to be fun. You know, I told him recently, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you were about two sentences away from me standing up and asking, who's preaching today? So Pete is the overseer of spiritual life. All the worship leaders and teams are accountable to him. He's the one who oversees prayer and healing and drama and the prophetic and the puppets and the audiovisual. All of those things fall under his purview. Now, do you think Pete can do all of those things? No. He needs people of the same spirit who will carry that burden with him. And there are some there, but there are other tasks that are languishing for the need of more people. Jess and Charlena oversee congregational life, the greeters and the ushers and the hospitality and the compassionate care and the connection groups and the living room and celebrate recovery and divorce care and healing hearts and theophostic prayer and intercessory prayer and the ministry to sex offenders. Some of you probably didn't even know we had that ministry. We don't advertise it. But how many of you know they need Jesus? Okay. Our transformational life, marriage enrichment, men's ministry, women's ministry, financial peace, orientation class, the alpha class. These things are designed not to fill your schedule, but to move you forward in your faith. We don't do things to be busy. We do things to help move you forward in your relationship with Christ. There was some contention over what we would call the other area, but Alexia prevailed. We call it real life. And that's where our outreach and prison ministry, missions, our publications, decorating, event coordinating, catering, all that stuff falls under her purview. Each of these activities are in somehow associated with what we are as a people or how we express ourselves outside of us to other people. And when you become a follower of Jesus, he sets this standard before you. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. I was involved in a conversation a few weeks ago in which somebody suggested probably 20% of our people do 80% of what gets done. So I did some research. The truth is 50% of our people do 100% of what gets done. And you know what that means? Only 50% of you are disobedient to the call of God on you. Now, I'm serious about that. You need to understand, every day of my life I'm serious about this. I believe Jesus Christ has given you gifts and graces that belong to Him to be expressed through you for His glory. Every single one of us who comes to Christ has been reconciled by the Spirit to Him, have things in us that He desires to express through us. And part of that expression requires you to have certain access to His presence on a regular basis. We call these things spiritual disciplines. You'll hear more about that in the month of September and October and November when I call us to days of prayer and fasting. But you have a responsibility to Christ. When you stand before Him on that day, you will not be standing behind me. Nor are you going to say to Him, "Well, Pastor wouldn't let me." That ain't ever going to fly. Because I believe Christ wants to be put on display through you in your world, and my job is to help you become that expression of Him to them. That's why we do this. When you go through what we're doing and the list of courses that are available, do we have an overhead of the courses for this coming fall? Is that a yes from anywhere? Well, no, that's the church calendar. You know, somebody told me, this was funny to me, somebody told me they were standing out in some store somewhere and overheard two people talking about our Father's house, so their ear picked up. And one person said to the other, "Well, about the only thing they do over there is Sunday, but where else are you going to go?" And I thought, all we ever do is Sunday? Really? Where did that calendar go? I'm looking for the day that's blank. Now, go to the website if you want to know what's going on. Okay, there's lots of stuff taking place around here. When we launch the curriculum this fall, there'll be the opportunity for some of you to be instructed in how to lay hands on people and see them healed. There'll be opportunity for some of you to learn how to move in your prophetic gift. There'll be opportunity for some of you to learn how to manage your finances so you can actually be available to God when He says to you, "I want you to go such and such and do such and such a thing." There are, out on the information table is a list of courses for the fall. Take one with you. Stick it on your refrigerator. Sign up for it. Those of you who are new to us, I'll be sitting with you a couple of Sundays from now for, I think, three or four Sundays after church, where we'll talk about what drives us at our core, the things we're committed to, how we can help you move forward in your faith, what you can do to serve God and release the grace that's resident in you. Look, folks, there's not going to be any gold stars for attending church every Sunday of your life. The gold stars come to those who are serving Jesus every day of their life, not just on the padded pew or hard Presbyterian benches, wherever it is you happen to sit. Jesse, I know that a lot of people are gone today, but how about you and whoever is serving with you? Just stand to your feet for a moment. Yeah, you can come up front. That's great. And Alexia just walked out the door, and Pete's not here, and Brandon's right there. We've got another half, three or four connection groups that are being launched this fall. And listen to me. I just this week, talked with somebody in our congregation who has been laid up for 4 months and told nobody. And they're not connected well enough for anybody to know they needed to be served. Would you please get connected? You don't know what's coming around the corner. Have people in your life who love you and will care for you and encourage you in your walk with the Lord. Stop acting like Netflix and Amazon Prime and Redbox are your real companions in life. They don't care about you. And a lot of what they have to say is not true. As we begin the fall return to normalcy, we have between the second week in September and the last week in May to actually amount to something for the Lord, and then you're all gone again. But during that time, redeem the time. We're going to be losing some wonderful people to transfers over the next year. What that means is God is going to be sending new people in They need to be taken in and helped to understand us by one of you. Some of you need to become sponsors for those who are walking in among us going,
what do y'all do? How do y'all do that? Why do y'all do that?
You can help them with that. Just get engaged. Brandon?
Do you need a special invitation, O man of the same spirit? Good.
And I assume Alexia is out in the yonder messing with something, right? What I want to invite you to do is we're going to take communion together. And I've been advised that this is our fifth Sunday of the month offering for the ministry that we're hoping will find a new leader soon called Young Life. How many of you are personally acquainted with Young Life? You know, there are tens of thousands of people now who have been touched by that ministry across this country. Very, very good at reaching teenagers and helping them move on in God as young people. But I'm going to release you. Actually, the ushers are going to release you row by row to come to the altar and take communion. But I'd like you to stop by one of these representatives and declare yourself to them. If any of those ministries up there is something that resonates within you, let them know that you're interested in talking with them about that. Yes, Tim. We are, we're willing to pray for our administrator, aren't we? All right, gentlemen, let us recognize that when Jesus paid the price for us to become part of the body, it also meant becoming part of one another and slapping teenagers around if they needed. Way to go, Grandpa. All right, if you'll dismiss them row by row, come and take the elements. Go ahead and share them here at the front with these folks, and let your conversation and your commitment and the things you need to think about weigh on you until you've made a decision.